The choice is ours to make. But in ignorance, we make the wrong choices. So Lord Chaitanya is telling the people that if you do not serve the darling of Yashoda now, in this life, then great sorrow awaits you at death. You'll be very sorrowful at the time of death. So we shouldn't wait to take up Krishna consciousness. Prahlad Maharaj says, Kumaram Achare Pragya. It should be taken up very young. See, like this boy here. Very young. Haribo. It should be taken up. A child can engage in Krishna consciousness very young. It's for everyone. So Lord Chaitanya continues. He says, each time the sun rises and sets, another day passes and is lost. You cannot buy it back. There is a verse that says, even if you have millions of gold coins, you cannot buy back 1 second. What to speak of, you know. You can't press rewind. Wait a minute, I wasn't ready yet. Give me back yesterday. No, it's gone. So, he says, so why do you remain idle and refuse to serve the Lord of your heart? We are refusing to serve, knowingly or unknowingly. We are refusing. So, he says, you should understand this essential fact that life is temporary, life as we know it anyway, and it's full of all kinds of miseries. So, make it your only business to take shelter of the holy name and always engage in his service. Then Bhaktivinoda Thakur Lord Chaitanya is still speaking to the people. He says, desiring to bless all souls, the sweet name of Krishna has descended to this material world, and now it shines like the sun in the sky of your heart, destroying the darkness of ignorance. Drink the pure nectar of the holy name of Krishna. It has satisfied the soul of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and therefore he says there is nothing but the holy name to be had within all the 14 worlds. And then here there's part two, Jeev Jago. So he says, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Gauranga is calling, wake up, sleeping souls, wake up, sleeping souls. Jeev Jago, Jeev Jago. You have been sleeping for so long on the lap of a witch called Maya. If you are sleeping in the lap of a witch, you might think, oh, this is very nice and comfortable. But it's a witch. Anything can happen. So Lord Chaitanya said, this is your position. You came into this world of birth and death saying, my Lord, I will certainly worship you. But you have forgotten your promise and you have remained in great ignorance. There is a chapter in Bhagavatam that describes life within the womb. And the soul gets an opportunity to see the Lord. He's alive. The soul is Remember, the soul, there's no, never birth nor death for the soul. And in the womb, he's conscious, and he gets a glimpse of the Lord. And he promises, because he's aware of his miserable condition in the womb, bent, cramped, being bitten by worms. And if the mother eats pungent food, it burns the skin. So he's miserable. When he sees the Lord, he begs him, please, get me out of here. And I promise you, I'll be your devotee when I come out. But when we come out, what happens? We all know. What happens? Our parents, our relatives, they all gather around us and make us feel that we are the most important thing in the world, so special. And if you want anything, you just have to cry and they'll give it to you. So, and we began to think, this material life is very nice. They're serving me, they're taking care of me, they'll give me anything I want. Forget all about Krishna. This is our position. We forget about Krishna. We say, later, when I get old. Yeah. It's true. I'm from Trinidad. Trinidad and Tobago is one country but two little islands in the Caribbean. And there, the population is a mixed population. It's almost 50-50, half Indians and half Africans. But there's some other people too, some Chinese and some Spanish and so on, some whites. But the majority, the two big groups are the Indians and the Africans. The history was that the Africans were brought there by the Portuguese. They were the biggest slave traders. And the island changed hands, changed ownership many times. At first it was the Spanish, then the French, the Portuguese, then the British. And when the British came after some time, they abolished slavery. So the plantation owners cried and said, now you've set the slaves free, who's going to do all the work? And the British government says, don't worry, we have the Indians. Because they were occupying India also, right? Until Gandhi, they were occupying India. So they came up with a new word, a new term. Instead of slavery, they called it indentured laborers. But it was like slavery. Maybe not as bad, but nonetheless, you had to work for 5 to 10 years indentured. Means with no salary. So, then after you could, if you wanted to go back to your country, you get free passage on a ship. But most of them decide to stay, because after all, these colonies were nice and potential was there. So there are many Indians, many Hindus, few Muslims. But I was there for the last 3 years. Up until the beginning of this year. I was the president of the temple there. And we used to go to the university to preach. And we had a group of young students coming. We would meet once a week at the campus. And there was yet one young Indian girl who was coming every week. And she was very interested in Krishna consciousness. She was studying Bhagavad Gita. So one day she said to me that she recently had an experience. And I said, what? She said, well, you know, in Trinidad, there were many what you call pandits. Pandits means, pandits supposed to mean learned, Brahmins. But oftentimes, they're not learned. So I used to call them bandits. Because they were only out to get the money. They're not giving any real direction. So she says, the pandit came to our home, and while he was there, I was reading Bhagavad Gita, and I in my room, and I came upon something. So I came to ask him if he could explain something from Bhagavad Gita. And he said to her, why you, this is not the time for this. He said, this is for when you get old. He said, right now you should just enjoy your youthful life. Why, don't be so serious about spiritual life. He's a pundit. So I told her, I says, he's not a pundit, he's a bandit. So, we are born in ignorance and we require knowledge, education. Unfortunately, all the educational institutions around the world, Prabhupada would tell us, there is no department for learning about the soul in none of the universities. Out of thousands, hundreds of thousands, they don't have a department to understand you, who you are. No Atma Tattva. But human life is meant for understanding this. The Vedanta Sutra says, Athato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time. You couldn't do it in the animal bodies. The animals are not interested. So now is the time, human time, to inquire about Brahman. Brahma Jigyasa, about spiritual life, about Brahma, about God. What is your relationship with Him? This is what human life is primarily meant for. So, then Lord Chaitanya says, I have descended just to save you. Except for me, who is your friend? No one else is your friend. Because who will inform you of this? If someone informed you, that's a friend. But generally, they don't. So we have to chant a mantra. It says, God save me from my friends. Because they're not telling me any. You know, when I wanted to join Prabhupada's mission, not one of my friends agreed with it. No one thought this was a good idea. No one. None of my family even. They didn't think it was a good idea. Of course, you know, Krishna consciousness was new, so they didn't understand what the movement was about. So, and the media didn't help. The media was always trying to make us look bad. Everywhere. But anyway, we went ahead anyway, in spite of their trying to talk me out of it. After meeting Prabhupada, I knew that I'll never meet anyone like him again. So pure and so wise. And more than anything, he was a lover of God. When you meet a lover of God, there's all your questions, all your doubts can be eradicated. Because for one who's a lover of God, God is not just an idea or concept. No, he's a person. And the pure devotee knows him, has a relationship with him, sees him everywhere. Yeah, sees him everywhere. Brahma Samhita says, Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilochanena Santak Sadaiva Rideshu Bilokayanti Yang Sham Sundaram Achinta Gunaswarupam Govindamari Purusham Tamaham Bhajam. Because their eyes are, is a poetic way of saying, their eyes are smeared with the ointment of love. Premanjana. They can see him not just once, but all the time, 24/7. Yeah, it's not that you just see him once and that's it. No, they see him all the time. So, Lord Chaitanya says, I have descended just to save you, and except for me, you have no friend in this world. Then he says, I have bought the medicine to eradicate the disease of illusion from which you are suffering. Yes. Enichi Oshadi. Oshadi means medicine. So take this Maha Mantra. You see, in the beginning it is like medicine. Chanting. It's like medicine in the beginning. And everyone knows, has the experience, when we are given medicine, we don't want to take it. You go to the doctor and he gives you medicine. And if, especially if the medicine is bitter, then you really don't want to take it. But this medicine is very sweet. It's very sweet medicine, very nice medicine. And the wonderful thing is, the more you take the medicine, then it becomes more than medicine. It becomes food. And you, with food, you have to eat. Right? We're always thinking, food, you know, I have to eat. You're always thinking, and when is the next meal? And then, as you chant more, from food it becomes like dessert. It's really, then it's relishable, enjoyable. The holy name is always sweet and nice, but in our diseased condition, we don't have a taste for it. There is a stage in the development of Krishna consciousness called ruchi. And when one gets to that stage, a taste, then taste is everything. It drives him further. chanting with ruchi, in the stage of ruchi, chanting with some taste, cannot stop. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I fall at the lotus feet of Lord Gauranga and begs him for this Maha Mantra. Chai. Where's the book? Bhagavad. So now we'll continue reading a little bit of Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Get proud and about their family. But Daksha, he didn't understand the position of Lord Shiva. There was a gathering to perform a jagya sacrifice, and there were many Brahmins and sages, and also many devatas came. Lord Brahma even came, Lord Shiva came, Indra, so on. And it's described that when Daksha entered the arena, he was so effulgent. He had some power. And then he took his seat. And when Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva entered, they were there already. But when Daksha entered, everyone stood up to receive him out of respect, except Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva is the most gentle, most gentle Vaishnava. He's the best of the Vaishnavas. There's a verse that says, Vaishnavanam yatha shambhu. So he is most exalted personality. Actually, his position is even greater than Brahma. Although he's a son of Brahma, his position is greater. But Daksha didn't understand this, or his envy made him forget, made him stupid. And he saw this Lord Shiva, he's not acknowledging me. He don't know why. Sometimes our minds may be somewhere else, And anyway, Lord Shiva didn't have to stand up for him. He's Mahadev. He's so great and powerful. But Daksha got, his envy got the best of him. And he stood up, and in the assembly he insulted Lord Shiva. He criticized him. He committed offense. Vaishnava parad. Most serious offense. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compares Vaishnava parad to a mad elephant. A mad elephant comes into your garden. That's it. The garden is finished. So, anyway, Daksha, in that assembly, he just lost it and continued criticism at one after another. And then he left the arena. But one of Lord Shiva's followers, principal associate, what's his name? Nandeshwar. So he couldn't tolerate it. So he stood up and retaliated. He began to curse. And he criticized the Brahmins and cursed the Brahmins in the audience who tolerated this and listened to this aparad voiced by Daksha and didn't stop it or speak up or do something. You know, they say silence means consent. It is said that if someone is blaspheming another devotee, you shouldn't just stay there and listen to it and tolerate it. You should leave. Actually, scripture says you can do that person, you should cut out his tongue. Of course, we cannot do that. Or you run and jump in the Ganges to purify yourself. But, if you can't defeat that person and shut him up, then leave. So, Nandeshwar, he spoke up and criticized. He countered and he cursed and cursed the Brahmins, saying, "What kind of Brahmins you all are? How could you tolerate this?" And so after some cursing, Bhrigu Muni, he's a big sage. Well, then he stood up and he began to counter curse. You know, in an assembly, an argument, it starts small and then it escalates. So Bhrigu, we are here where Bhrigu is now. He's firing back. He's a sage for the, you know. So, we are now at text 28. Is the verse written somewhere?
Yep.
Okay. Bhava.
Bhava.
Vrata. Dhara ye cha bhavavrata dhara ye cha. Ye cha tan samanuvrata ye cha tan samanuvrata pashandinas te bhavantu pashandinas te bhavantu sach chastra paripantina,
paripantina,
sach chastra paripantina. Okay. Bhavavrata daraye cha,
ye cha tan samanuvrata,
Ashandinaste bhavantu sach chastra paripantina bhavavrata daraye cha yecha tan samanuvrata Pashandinaste bhavantu sach chastra paripantina. Some of you men. bhavantu. Synonyms now. Bhavavrata dhara. Taking a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva. Ye. Who. Cha. And. Ye. Who. Cha. And. Tan. Such principles. Samanuvrata, following. Pashandina, atheists. Te, they. Bhavantu, let them become. Sat Shastra Paripantina, diverted from transcendental scriptural injunctions. So Bhrigu Muni says, one who takes a vow to satisfy Lord Shiva, or who follows such principles, will certainly become an atheist and be diverted from transcendental scriptural injunctions. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. It is sometimes seen that devotees of Lord Shiva imitate the characteristics of Lord Shiva. For example, Lord Shiva drank an ocean of poison. So, some of the followers of Lord Shiva imitate him and try to take intoxicants like ganja, marijuana. But they cannot drink an ocean of poison. But they think we can smoke ganja. So here, the curse is that if someone follows such principles, he must become an infidel and turn against the principles of Vedic religion, Vedic regulation. It is said that such devotees of Lord Shiva will be such Shastra Paripantina, which means opposed to the conclusions of Shastra, or scripture. This is confirmed in the Padma Purana also. Lord Shiva was ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to preach the impersonal or Mayavad philosophy. This, he was ordered to do so for a particular purpose, just as Lord Buddha, he preached a philosophy of voidism for a particular purpose that is mentioned in the Shastra. Sometimes it is necessary to preach a philosophical doctrine which is against the Vedic conclusion. Yes. In the Shiva Purana, it is stated that Lord Shiva said to Parvati that in the Kali Yuga, in the body of a Brahmana, he would preach the Mayavad philosophy. Thus it is generally found that the worshippers of Lord Shiva are Mayavadi philosophers, Mayavadi followers. Lord Shiva himself says, Mayavadam asat shastram, means asat shastra. Asat shastra is explained here, means the doctrine of Mayavad or impersonalism or becoming one with the Supreme. This is asat, not sat. Sat shastra is Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita. But the Mayavad is described as asat shastra. It means it's not actually to be followed. But there was a reason for it. Anyway, Bhrigu Muni cursed that persons who worship Lord Shiva would become followers of this Mayavad Asat Shastra, which attempts to establish that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is impersonal. Besides that, among the worshippers of Lord Shiva, there is a section who live a very devilish life. Srimad Bhagavatam and Narad Pancharatra are authorized scriptures and they are considered to be sat shastras or scriptures which lead one to the path of God realization, whereas the asat shastras are just the opposite. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shlokaya Chakshun Unmilatam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Rupa Goswami prays for the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. Because Lord Chaitanya is, among many things, Lord Chaitanya is, he's also Krishna, none different, Swayam Bhagavan. But he came and formed his own sampradaya. And he is the Acharya. This is his leela is as a sannyasi is called his acharya leela, his teaching. He didn't write any books, although Prabhupada says that the first business of an acharya is to give a literary contribution, to write something. But sometimes there are acharyas who don't. Lord Chaitanya, he said, He set the precedent. He didn't write anything. He spoke a few verses called Shikshastakam. And those verses were all spoken at different times. And they were put together as a work, as a poem, by the Venerable Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami. But Lord Chaitanya actually spoke those verses on different times to different people. But he taught, nonetheless, as Acharya means one who teaches by example. He taught by his example, and he also spoke. He taught Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami for many, many days, explaining them the conclusions of the Vedas. And then he ordered them to write books and explain these things. So there is a need for that. There's always a need for that. Because as time goes on, people become more dull. They cannot understand Vedas. They have no time also. They cannot. But the saintly persons, they can write and explain it, break it down. So for us, it was necessary. It is the mercy of Prabhupada that he has brought these texts, Srimad Bhagavatam especially. This is Amalam Puranam, the spotless Purana. This is really Sat. Sat Shastra. About the Goswamis, it is said, Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipunu Saddharma Sangstapako. They search through all the Shastras and they then took out, presented what the essential things. Because there's so much, as I say, there's so much in the Vedas. And most people, followers of the Vedas, they get waylaid. They get distracted by the karma kanda. Right? Karma kanda. Because their interests are, they want sense gratification, they want material life, they want to go to the heavenly planets, they want this, they want that. And Vyas has given all prescriptions for these things. Therefore Narad Muni, the spiritual master of Vyas, he chastised Vyas and says, you've done a disservice by giving them all these things. Because that's where they're at. They want sense gratification. And you've just facilitated them. Because Vyas was not, after writing so much, he was not satisfied. He felt, Prabhupada used the word, undone. That is not, he was not happy after giving so much. And he wrote all the Puranas, 18 Puranas, all these things. But Narad Muni, his spiritual master, Vyas asked him, why am I feeling like this? You must know the answer. Why am I feeling like this? I don't know why. So Narad Muni told him, he said, you haven't sufficiently glorified Krishna. Yes, you've mentioned him here and there in this Purana and that Purana, but you haven't come out and says and glorified him. So then he ordered him, go and sit in meditation and samadhi. Get what he says? You are a qualified person. You sit in samadhi and you will see the pastimes of Lord Krishna in samadhi. And then you will write about that. So that is Srimad Bhagavatam. It is also sometimes called Samadhi Bhashya. It's a commentary on the Vedanta Sutra, natural commentary, but it comes from Vyasa's Samadhi, his being in Samadhi. So it's such a wonderful scripture. This is Sat Shastra. There is no cheating. In the Bhagavatam, the very beginning, it says, Dharma Projita Kaitavatra Parama Nirmatsaranam Satam. All cheating things means this karmakandhi, all of that is kicked out. Yes. So Bhrigu is cursing, saying, this is what's going to result of. That people, you know, the Brahmins become polluted, degraded. The pundits become bandits. But Lord Shiva is doing that service. There was reason, and the Shastra says, gives the history. First, Lord Buddha appeared before Mayavadi was. Lord Buddha appeared, and he came for a purpose to stop the animal killing, because the followers of the Vedas were misusing the scriptures and began killing the animals. He began eating animals. Yes. Kali Yuga. So the Lord came, Lord Buddha, with a compassionate heart. He came to stop that. So he preached this Ahimsa philosophy. And of course, when he began to preach, the people said, why are you stopping us from killing the animals? It's sanctioned in the Vedas. But they were misusing it, twisting. They say sometimes the devil will cite scripture even. So the Lord Buddha said, forget about your Vedas. I don't care about Vedas. So he decried the Vedas. Therefore his philosophy also should not be followed. But he had a purpose to do, which he accomplished. He preached this, what do you call it, voidism. And people, all of India became rampant because one emperor, Ashok, under his patronage, Buddhism spread everywhere. And the animal killing stopped. So it was Lord Buddha accomplished what he came to do. But then, how to get the people back to following the Vedas? This time without misinterpreting it and without killing the animals. Lord Shiva came in, was deputed. And he preached, this is the reason for his Mayavad. He preached, this Mayavad resembles Buddhism. It resembles it. Because Buddhism said, there is no God. But Mayavadi said, yes, there is God. But he has no form. It's tricking. So Lord Shiva accomplished this. And Buddhism was then driven out of India. And it took shelter in neighboring countries. So now that that was done, you know, Mayavadi was rampant everywhere. So most people, many people in India, are tinged with this Mayavadi idea. So there's need to get rid of that Mayavadi. Prabhupada's prana mantra, he says, Namaste Sarasati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivishesha Shunyavadi Pasyata Adeshatak. So if you read Prabhupada's book, you'll see he's always bashing on the Mayavadis. And his Guru Maharaj used to also. Because it's rampant and it... So, without following the sat shastras, then it just becomes whatever people are doing. It just becomes a disturbance in society. Prabhupada cites one. He says. These asat shastras means shastras that are opposed to the conclusions of scripture. And Prabhupada said this is confirmed in the Padma Purana. Shruti Smuti Puranadi Pancharatri Vidimbina Ait Kantiki Hare Bhakti Utpatyayeva Kalpate. Religion which does not follow the Sat Shastra is just a disturbance in society. So you have so many people making up their own thing and doing whatever they want. You'll find in the marketplace there are many, many things there. And also in the West, it is they're coming over here too, selling their wares. But we should follow. By following Guru Parampara, Krishna, he says, Evam Parampara Praptam. This is how you will know the truth. You have to connect with Guru Parampara. Otherwise, you will be bewildered. You will be bewildered due to the curse of Bhrigu. So, we should read these books of Prabhupada. He labored so much to give it to the world. And as his followers, our duty is to read these books and then distribute them also. So, I will stop there. It's almost 9. We have time for one or two questions. Anybody? Who's first? You. The planetary systems. Janalok, Tapalok, Mahalok, there's many. Sometimes Prabhupada says there's three. Sometimes it's described as three planetary systems, means upper, middle, and lower. We are situated in the middle. This planet is in one of the middle planets. Upper means heavenly planets, and lower means hellish planets. But sometimes it's also described as 14. Just broken down more. The same three, but broken down into 14. Okay? Thank you.
One question, one comment. Comment is, when I was 5 years old, my mother used to say, Punrapi Janini Yatrashanam Traya Maharaj Traya Maharaj. What is that? That in the womb there is so much problems that if you don't become a devotee, you have to go to another womb.
Another womb. Yes. Yes.
My question to you is, how do you meet Srila Prabhupada?
Briefly?
Yeah.
I came to America. I was just turning 21. And I met the devotees first. The devotees of Prabhupada. This was in New York City, America. I came to America to be with my mother, my dear mother. She had left Trinidad when I was 15. My father had died when I was 14. And it was difficult for her in Trinidad. So she got an opportunity to go to America because America is like the land of opportunities. And then she left me with some uncle and aunt, and I finished my schooling there in Trinidad. And then I came when I was 21. And I met the devotees not long after. And I didn't know anything about anything. I didn't know who was Krishna, I didn't know what. I had never seen a devotee, so they were definitely different. But they used to come and they used to be on the streets chanting in Manhattan. And I encountered them and I liked the sound, even though I didn't know what it means. I thought the sound was pleasing enough. So I would stand and listen to them. I used to stand across the street because I thought I was safe. And they would chant over there, I'm over here. So. But I was secretly, you know, enjoying listening to the chanting. Eventually they caught me and said, invited me to come to the temple. So one thing led to another, I kept going. And I realized by going to the temple and talking with them what the whole movement was. I didn't even realize it was a movement. I thought it was just those few on the streets. When I go to the temple, they had about 80 devotees living in really cramped conditions. I spent one night. My first visit to the temple, they convinced me to spend the night. And by the next morning when I left, I thought, I could never live like this. I thought, as much as I liked them and I respected them, I just thought, I don't think I could live like this. But then, a few months later, Prabhupada came. I had gone to the temple on Sunday. I was going for the Sunday feast. And he came and, well, when I arrived, he wasn't there yet, but the devotees told me, they said, you're lucky. And I said, how am I lucky? They said, Prabhupada's at the airport, and he's coming, and he's going to give the Sunday talk. So I said, oh. So I made sure I get a place near the Vyasasan, like right up there. Because I wanted to see and hear everything that he would say. And he came and he spoke. And by the time I was leaving the temple that evening to go home, all I could think was, I have to join. Before I was thinking I could never do that. But now, all of that, all the austerities that I was aware of, it seemed a small price to pay to get his association. So, and of course, joining wasn't easy. As I said, none of my friends thought it was a good idea. Nobody thought it was a good idea. I had cousins in New York, and you know, and then my mother, she of course was upset. She didn't mind me going to the temple every week. She could live with that. I would still go to church with her on Sunday mornings. She was a Catholic. She raised me as a Catholic, so I would still go with her. And in the afternoon, I would go to the temple. And of course, it became very clear I'm getting more spiritual nourishment at the Sunday feast. Or to speak of the feast, you know. But anyway, when I decided I'm going to join, I told my mother. And she began to cry. She didn't make it easy for me. She began to cry. So I said, "Why are you crying?" I said, "I'm cleaning up my act. Right? I'm straightening up. You didn't cry when I was doing drugs. You never cried. You knew I was doing it. You didn't cry when I was drinking alcohol. You didn't cry about anything. Now I'm getting it together. I'm becoming I'm really purifying my existence. And now you're crying." I said, "You're crying at the wrong time. Now you should be happy. You should be dancing and happy." She got the idea, because after some time, you know, within a year, she changed. She began to really appreciate the devotees. So much that after 2 years in New York, I moved to Los Angeles. And after 2 years in Los Angeles, they sent me 1 hour away to be president of the Laguna Beach Temple. And while I was there, the temple was a little house, but an opportunity came and I was able to trade the house for a church. Yeah. And church was a nice big, you know, high ceilings, big hall. We spent 1 year renovating it, making it ready to install Panchatattva. So 2 weeks before, I wrote my mother and told her, she was still living in New York. I would always kept communication with her, writing letters. That's how we communicated. By writing letters. It's like a dying art. People don't write letters anymore because everyone's got a cell phone except me. So I told her, "Why don't you come out for the opening? The opening is going to be on this day. Why don't you come out to see?" So she came out for a whole week, and she lived in the Brahmacharini ashram. My mother. That's all the facilities we had. She lived with the young girls, slept on a sleeping bag on the floor, and she would get up and come for Mangalarti every day. So much she had changed from the beginning, crying. Now she comes and stays in the ashram, and the whole week she would do service all day long. Wash pots, peel potatoes. She sewed curtains for the big windows in the church, the temple. And during the morning after Mangala Arati. You know how here we have Japa, and there's Tulsi Devi in the center, and everyone goes around walking circumambulating. My mother would have her rosary beads in her hand, and she was circumambulating Tulsi, saying her prayers. And she taught what I'm doing and what you all are doing is the same. So I never tried to stop her or argue with her about it. You know, I mean, she was there. That was good enough. And she saw the benefit of how what it did for me. So Prabhupada was Prabhupada became my father, really. And it was the best decision I ever made to join. All right, I think we should stop now. It's breakfast time. Hari Bol. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.